So it's time for this weekend's edition of MediaWise with Kamishun Naman, here to help you navigate your personal media space, be safe online, and be educated on the information superhighway. And I'm joined by author and journalist Aoife Barry to have a chat with us about how our lives have changed since Steve Jobs introduced us to the iPhone. Thanks for joining us, Aoife.
Morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome. Now, I know you've written extensively and talked about, I suppose, how smartphones, the online world has changed our lives in recent years. I mean, how did we end up in a world where all we seem to do every day is stare at phone screens and computer screens?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Well, I think we have to go back to 2007, really, to answer that question, to when the iPhone launched. Because we've obviously had the internet for quite a long time. I mean, it was the early days developed, you know, in the 80s. By the 90s, people had the internet. By the early 2000s, a lot more people had it. But it was in 2007 that the iPhone was launched and that we really saw the internet go from being on a computer in your kitchen or, you know, a room in your house, your bedroom or whatever, to a small device in your pocket, because the iPhone became quite quickly very affordable for a lot of people. And it meant that now we not only had access to the internet at any particular time we wanted, but also it meant that tech companies started developing apps, which meant that we had to, you know, access their services only through that phone, and that we could access them at any moment. And sometimes those are really great things. You know, we have stuff like Google Maps, you know, which have been very handy for a lot of people at different times.
Yeah.
And then we also have, of course, social media, which was able to go into a totally new era because of the smartphone generation.
I mean, the thing that blew me away about the iPhone when I first saw Steve Jobs present it to me was how up till then we'd had BlackBerries, where you had this little keyboard on your phone.
Yeah.
And you basically just got text on the screen and the information came through as text. But to be able to see what we're used to seeing on a computer screen in the palm of your hand, the graphics, and to be able to pinch and zoom, it was revolutionary. Revolutionary, wasn't it?
Completely revolutionary. And, you know, it meant that companies were able to attract our attention in ways that they couldn't attract before. I mean, like you described using a BlackBerry there, it's not that interesting when you look at a BlackBerry or when you think of the
no.
old versions of mobile phones you had. You didn't want to spend all day in it. I mean, you might have played Snake or something for like 10 minutes, but that was as far as the entertainment went. But with smartphones, it meant that anybody could kind of grab our attention if they were good at designing apps, you know, that actually, you know, were very colorful. You know, they had information on it that we needed. And we know that, you know, looking at apps does spark a bit of dopamine in us. It does,
yeah,
you know, attract
sure.
us to looking at things on our phones. So
it's like a magpie seeing something silvery and delightful, isn't it? We can't be drawn away from it.
Yeah, completely. And it's meant then if you look at sites like Facebook and Twitter, you know, social media, I think, you know, they were able to develop apps that had this thing called the infinite scroll. So you never get to the bottom of Facebook. You never get to the bottom of Twitter. You never get to the bottom of TikTok. You're always kept on the apps for as long as possible. So these things were developed, these kind of techniques to keep people on the apps were developed. And right now in this world, when we look back, we can really see the impact of having social media developing so quickly and becoming so important globally, and the fact that it attracts our attention so easily, keeps us on the sites. And we encounter some really great stuff on social media, but we also can encounter some really unhelpful or even damaging things too. And we've seen that coming through, particularly post-COVID or during COVID, with misinformation. So misinformation can spread so easily on social media. So you have a lot of things coming together there. You have the availability of apps at any given time on your phone. You have the companies, the tech companies, knowing that they can attract our attention really easily. And then you have bad actors knowing that they can use those sites. Because it's very hard to moderate social media in many ways. They know that they can use those sites to try and draw people into their world.
I liken social media and the ability for us to be able to give our opinion on everything to everyone at the same time. A bit like back in the day when you'd kind of whisper to your buddy or you'd make a comment about somebody or something. But it was really only between two people or a few people. But now everybody has their say and everybody has their moan on everything to everyone, don't they?
Yeah, they absolutely do. And you can really see the impact of that in my book, Social Capital. So in that book, it came out last year and I spent about a year or so interviewing different people about how they've been affected. Now, we have brought in a law, Ireland has brought in a law called Coco's Law to try and deal with, you know, harassment and cyberbullying on social media, but it's still a very difficult thing to actually deal with. And I think speaking to all those people really showed me how, you know, I might be having an okay time most of the time, we'll say, on the internet, but there's some people who are having some really, really awful times on social media, and we still haven't fully figured out how to stop this from happening.
When you think about, for example, the stuff I do here, I can't just say something about somebody unfounded. But people on social media can literally put anything they want up. And for the most part, there's nobody really challenging that.
Each app, each company, each tech company has its own rules around people's behaviour. And the thing is that those rules have evolved and developed in response to people's behaviour as years have gone on. So, you know, you often have the situation where these particular sites are set up by people in America, which of course has the idea much stronger than Europe of freedom of speech, and that idea where freedom of speech should go, I suppose, ahead of the impact of that speech on other people. That's like a general idea of a kind of a cultural belief that's also enshrined in the Constitution. So if you have American companies that have that particular attitude around freedom of speech, of course they're going to set up a company and say, well, you know, we want to make sure that this is going through our app and through our social media platform. People should be free to say whatever they want to say. And in many ways it could seem as a very noble thing that they're not starting off saying we want to censor people. But what that's led to is that over time they had to realize that actually everybody getting to say what they wanted meant that some people were going to be impacted by that. So they've had to kind of scrabble to deal with that. Now, they do different things like moderation. They can have AI moderation where the technology itself is picking up certain language and deleting things or suspending things or dealing with people's accounts. They also have individual people like human moderators that are working around the world to try and deal with content that's flagged. But there's always kind of behind the curve. And you also have something like Twitter, which is now called X, which is owned by Elon Musk. And with that particular site, you see the impact of one person at the top of the chain in that company on everything that comes down. So as soon as Elon Musk bought X, his viewpoints around the world and around people's behavior and around what was acceptable became what was acceptable on Twitter. And why that was so important is because Twitter has been used by politicians, by journalists, by individual people for the last, you know, 12, 13, 14 years to share really important information. And now we were seeing a kind of a breakdown of the moderation that had been going on Twitter because certain things were now more permissible than they had been in the past.
What should people do now if they see a post about themselves or a comment made? Well, what sort of comeback do we have?
It's a really good question because people are coming up against this a lot. I mean, you can do very basic things like report the comment, you can block the person, you can mute the person, you know, if you decide, look, I just don't like this comment, I just don't want to see it. So you can block it, you can report it. Now, when you report things, again, you're depending on the company to decide whether they believe that post has actually broken any rules.
Yeah.
If you do believe that that person has said something that's defamatory to you, if you believe that it's something that actually in a court of law could stand up as being defamatory, you could, you know, try and take a legal case against that person. To do that, though, you're going to have to discover their identity if you don't already know it. That means going to the High Court and getting a particular order called a Norwich Pharmacal Order. And that order would get the company to, if it was passed, would get the company to tell you the identity of the person who posted it. And then you could take maybe a civil or criminal case against them. You could alternatively go to the Gardaí with those posts and say to them, you know, can you investigate this? The doors to the High Court are like the doors to the Ritz, you know, they're open to anybody technically.
Yeah.
But you do need a lot of money if you're going to be taking a court case against people.
Aoife Barry, author and journalist, thanks so much for your insight on MediaWise this week. Much appreciated.
Thanks a million.
MediaWise back next weekend on Saturday Live around this time in association with Cumasún Naman. It's all about online safety, fact-checking, digital skills and how to navigate social and traditional media. On Sunshine 106.8, Dublin's easy place to relax.